I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 202 of Low Limit Football on this 7th of May, 2018, on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we are going to look back on the Champions League and Europa League semifinals and see which teams will be playing for the championships. We will officially name our fifth league champion tonight. Did Juve hold on, or did Napoli make it close on the weekend? We're going to go take a look. We're going to look back on El Clasico. Is Barcelona still unbeaten in La Liga? We'll take a look and see. We're also going to look back on the one-sided Hudson River Derby on the weekend and see if New York is painted red or blue. We're going to do all this and much more with Breaking the Line's very own Zach Lowy, who will be joining us in about 15 minutes. Let me bring in my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well, Joe. More than anything, I think we're very excited that perhaps the European season is over. It's been an entertaining one. You know, we have a Champions League final all set. We have a Europa League final all set. And we're just less than 40 days away from the World Cup. And Joe, speaking of the World Cup, mm-hmm. I mean, we've done pretty well over the last 5 months regarding the World Cup, haven't we?
I was going to say, congratulations are in order on this weekend. We completed our series of 32 shows featuring the 32 teams of the World Cup. The last one, Shuaib Ahmed joined us from Footy Onions to break down Saudi Arabia. We posted that last night, tweeted it this morning. It's gotten a lot of play over the last roughly 24 hours. But it was show number 32 of 32. They can all be found on the website, lowlimitfootball.com. You can also tune into the All In Sports Network, where they're playing a bunch of them over and over again. And I didn't tell you yet, Rob, but I know Preston and I are going to try to get together over the next day or so to discuss, you know, maybe doing something special with the playlist on the All In Sports Talk Network to have some kind of series run where we're going to preview all the shows. But we'll definitely tweet them leading up. 32 teams within 32 days of the World Cup. We'll tweet each one once a day. Probably do it, I think, alphabetically. What do you think, Rob?
We'll certainly have to think about it. I mean, Obviously, perhaps in order of their ranking, or maybe in the order that they qualified. I think that would be even much more interesting. But yeah, certainly it's been a remarkable ride for all of us. It's certainly been informative. It's been fun. It certainly has been a challenge, but thankfully we were able to get 31 special guests to do these 32 shows, and we can't thank them any enough for really just helping us break down teams. And really, Joe, I mean, we've perhaps had these assumptions over these countries for quite a while, but certainly we've definitely learned a lot of stuff that we didn't know about, until after we had these shows.
Definitely, you know, it was amazing the amount of knowledge that each guest brought to us, and you know, we will definitely thank each of them individually. We've thanked them at the end of every show, but just the insight, and for me, Rob, I was going to say the one question that I loved asking, because I loved the answer every time, because the answer was the same, but it was different. Every single time I asked this question was, what if that country won the World Cup? And it was awesome. I mean,
it was.
I mean, in our last one, Shuaib answered it by saying he would basically move back to Saudi Arabia for 6 months because the party would be so ridiculously off the wall. And the other thing I took from him is that, you know, the leaders of Saudi Arabia, if Saudi Arabia did win the World Cup, they would be showered with money and gifts and cars and homes. I mean, you know, we talk about these players coming home as national heroes. You know, Shuaib almost made it sound like they would go home as gods.
and I love the interpretation that he made, and obviously you can listen to the episode more later. But you know, then he talk about the way, like, if one of the Saudi Arabian players score a goal, he wins like a Bentley or something.
Yeah. It was, and I don't remember the player's name. It was the World Cup. I want to say in 2002, Rob. Want to say it was 2002. It was either 98 or 2002. Right. Where the first Saudi player scored in the World Cup. It was the first Saudi goal ever scored in the World Cup. And the sheiks in Saudi Arabia bought him a Bentley for scoring the goal. I mean, I will get on the pitch and try myself. My old busted legs and everything. We'll give it a shot, see if we can win a Bentley, you know?
Shit, I mean, hey, what happens if we score a hat-trick?
Listen, I'll take Gerard Piqué out for that one, trust me. Sergio Ramos got nothing on me if exactly. I'm coming down. There's a Bentley behind him, so.
Exactly. No, but more than anything, it's been a fun ride, and, you know, I think more than anything, you know, it brings us a different mindset when we're watching these teams, and certainly, you know, we start to really assess them as not just like little minnows or a team that perhaps isn't as well known, but you know, you start to listen to it and you try to take all the information that all those guests get, and really, you know, when you look on it on the pitch in about a month or so, you start to understand why they say such a thing, you know, why they play like this, why this player is good, why this player is bad, you know, why they function like this. It really makes sense, and I think that's something that perhaps maybe a lot of people don't have time for, but certainly, you know, it's interesting as well to really get to know a different country and to learn from it as well. I mean, certainly for us here in the United States, you know, one of the big things that I was able to take out is just the way that they view things and the way that they all, you know, assess themselves from youth level to senior level. And I just think to myself, wow, if the United States can learn something, and it doesn't even have to be from a Germany or a Brazil, but, you know, learn from a Peru or an Iceland, you know, it's something that maybe, you know, getting the best of both worlds could help the United States, that hopefully they don't get those types of failures. And one last thing as well, I mean, more than anything, you talk about the reaction that they get, that all of our guests get for when they say, oh, what happens if this country wins the World Cup? I mean, it's something that, you know, although we speak different languages, although we have all different cultures whatsoever, the one thing that really unites us is soccer, is football. And really, you know, it makes sense that we all love the sport. We all have the passion for it. But more than anything, it's just it has that kind of brotherhood or sisterhood of literally just understanding how all of us view the sport and really want us to succeed in the same way that all these other 32 countries want to do it.
Yeah, agreed. No doubt about it. So let's, you know, and everyone, like we said, they're on lowlimitfootball.com. They're playing on the All In Sports Talk Network. If you have a particular country that you're rooting for going into this World Cup and you want to hear about their opponents, you can definitely go and check out what group they're in. And then we've got previews for all of them. So definitely go check them out. Rob, let's do the trivia question real quick. And let's refocus here a little bit on Champions League, because I know we're going to go Champions League heavy in a minute here. And my question is Champions League related. The source of the information on this is ESPN. Okay.
Okay.
And in the Champions League era.
Yep.
Okay. Real Madrid, by beating Bayern Munich in the semifinals, qualified for their seventh final in the Champions League era, breaking a three-way tie for the most appearances. There were three teams tied with six. It was Real Madrid and these two other teams. Can you name them?
I think I got one. I know one is definitely straight out. And this is Champions League era, so this is like 92, 93,
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, about to say. Okay. Yeah, so, I think I got it.
You think you've got it? All right. Well, tune in about an hour, and we'll get you that answer for sure. So let's, and again, like I said, we're going a little heavy Champions League, so let's get to opening thoughts tonight. And opening thoughts really has more of a journalistic focus, Rob, and it pertains to the comments made by Ali Moreno at ESPN FC post Roma's elimination from the Champions League by Liverpool. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to dig into an article here as soon as I can find it, because actually the article was posted by ESPN, and I want to use some of the quotes that he put out there. He was talking about Roma, and he said, "Oh, let's face it, Roma is not a good team." And obviously this caught the ire of James Pallotta, who is the owner of AS Roma. He also said when he really focused on the defense, and I know we talked about the defense when we had Tim Vickery on a couple weeks ago, and he really focused on the center backs. And I'm just looking for the quotes here quickly, and here it is. You look at and these are Moreno's quotes. You look at a team that defensively they have their issues. You know how Liverpool had issues defensively? This team has issues definitely. Fazio, no thanks, no, appreciate it, but I don't want it. Manolas, no thank you, I don't want it, appreciate it. Talked about Kolarov, can't run, cannot defend. On the midfield, De Rossi, yes, a lot of experience, but can't run, and that's difficult when you have a team in transition like Liverpool that is going to expose a lack of speed. Overall, Roma is just simply a team that is not good enough. Those are his direct quotes from the ESPN FC episode on Wednesday night after the game. I'm going to jump in here first because also I want to add that obviously Pallotta, you know, fired back at Moreno. There was a lot of let's say, Twitterverse battle back or shout back at Moreno and at ESPN FC for their comments. And then Craig Burley on, I believe, Thursday doubles down on Moreno and basically talks about the Italian national team and talks about how the Italian national team was blaming UEFA, blaming the referees, blaming all these other people. And it just leads me to believe that when Craig Burley, who I respect as a pundit, I think he's actually pretty good. When Craig Burley comes on and says those types of things, you wonder how out of touch the people at ESPN are when they're being pundits and being talking heads on TV. Because if Burley did any homework during the Italy debacle, he would realize that not one person in the media, and if they exist, I'd love to meet them, but not one blamed the referees, not one blamed UEFA, not one blamed travel, not one blamed bad calls, things like that. They blamed Carlo Tavecchio, they blamed Giampiero Ventura, they blamed the Italian FIGC. They did never blamed anyone but those points. And for Burley to come out and double down on Moreno by saying the Italian fans were complaining about Italy being eliminated from the World Cup about these points shows how out of touch they are there. And I've said this to you, Rob. There are some entities in the United States that are EPL-centric. Meaning that if it didn't happen in England, then it doesn't count. England is the best. England is the best this. England is the best that. And you look at Moreno's rankings of these players, and I'm calling this from an Adriano Del Monte retweet. And Adriano Del Monte, by the way, is in Australia. Highlighted how Kostas Manolas for Roma was rated as a 4 in the 4-2 win over Liverpool. He was rated as a 4 defensively by Ali Moreno. However, Virgil van Dijk was rated as an 8 in the same match by Steve Nichol. And the facts are, he looked at it statistically, and he looked at aerials won, where Manolas won 16 aerials versus van Dijk's 5. He looked at blocked shots, where Manolas blocked 3 shots, van Dijk blocked none. Goals conceded, obviously Manolas' team conceded 4, Van Dijk's conceded 2. I'm sorry, Van Dijk's conceded 4, Manolas conceded 4. Also, from what I saw in the second half, Manolas had quite a bit of Mo Salah in his back pocket, where Mo Salah didn't even exist in the second half. But Manolas gets rated a 4 and Van Dijk gets rated an 8. What game were you guys watching? You know, that's it amazes me how it went that way and how people in this country will look at what was said by Craig Burley, by Ale Moreno, and take it as gospel. When, to me, it is very nearsighted into what Roma did on Wednesday and how close they came. And I'm not even getting into the whole refereeing decisions or anything like that, but it's just very, very nearsighted to what that game actually was, that it makes you question those folks credibility? I mean, Rob, I'm gonna throw it to you because I've talked enough about it, but I want your 2 cents on it.
Well, certainly, I don't want to criticize ESPN more than anything, and rightly so. I think I saw a great tweet by Juan Arango, and maybe this is something that we should understand or perhaps not understand, but he said that, you know, when Italian Football TV was talking about it on their podcast, he said people really don't get that on television, that people are paid more for saying those type of statements and basically the criticism of Alejandro Moreno and Craig Berube. Why? Because podcasts like these are talking about them. People are talking about them. People are mad and even offended. Mission accomplished. Think of it as a wrestling. And, you know, I mean, you know, ESPN obviously, you know, doesn't have the rights to many soccer games in this country. They used to have the Premier League. You know, they used to have a bunch of networks. But, you know, that's all been taken away by, you know, NBC, who takes care of the Premier League. Fox, who takes care of the Bundesliga. BN, who takes care of Serie A, Liga and La Liga. You know, Fox has the Champions League. Have the World Cup. You know, it's certainly... And I think that's probably more for them to be able to digest all these top leagues. And it's certainly going to be harder for them to really understand, you know, how, you know, different teams play. And certainly, you know, being nearsighted towards the Serie A game is really a stereotype and perhaps too English-centric, considering how they're mainly focused on that. We don't want to really do too much of an advertisement for them. But, you know, one thing's for sure, I mean... You look at this Roma team being bad, all right? Mm-hmm. Looking in their group real quick, the only team that conceded less in their group is Atletico Madrid, and they're in the Europa League final. Mm-hmm. Chelsea conceded 8. Even though they scored 16, they conceded 8. You know, they did where they were able to help Barcelona, and they, rightly so, could have probably won the first game over there. But, you know, it's been a tough ride for Roma regardless. I mean, they didn't come up to close aggregate games. The 2-2 against Shakhtar Donetsk, where they advanced on away goals. The 4-4 against Barcelona, where they also advanced on away goals, and then the 7-6 loss to Roma. So it's been close games for all of Roma's, you know, essential campaign of the Champions League. But certainly, it's not. We can't say that's bad. I mean, my God. I mean, if you're going to compare that and say Arsenal had a better season, or Manchester United, or any of those other teams, Borussia Dortmund, you know, I think Roma's going to probably end regardless of them not winning anything this year. I mean, you know, probably. When we finish the end of the season and someone goes and say, okay, what were the top 10 teams this year, even including the champions, people have to put Roma on that list, don't you think, Joe?
I would think so. I mean, and let's keep in mind, Rob, you know, everyone talks about, you know, the way it was put was that they're not good enough. I mean, yes, over two legs, they weren't good enough to beat Liverpool. And I'm not arguing that point. But my point is they made it sound like it was a destruction. You know, that it was a total dismantling of Roma, and it wasn't. It wasn't. And in fact, not for nothing, Roma on Wednesday was the better team. They were the better team. I mean, you want to start bringing the calls into it, whatever. I don't even want to go there.
And one thing's for sure, I don't know why the Italian national team had to do anything about this. How many players from Roma play on the national team?
Yeah,
I'll let you answer that, Joe,
Let me think about it. Stefan El Shaarawy, okay.
Yep.
Florenzi.
Yep.
De Rossi, who is now retired from the national team.
Yep. One more.
I'm just
new guy.
I'm missing it. I'm missing it.
Pellegrini. That's it.
Thank you, Pellegrini. That's it.
So, that's it. In the last year, those are the only Roma players. Because you know, to be fair, there aren't a lot of Italians on this team. Regardless, I mean,
right.
you look at Roma's entire team. It's pretty diverse. There's not a lot of Italians on this team.
No,
so I don't know why he's bringing up the Italian national team. For a reason. I mean, maybe if this was Milan, maybe if this was Juventus or Napoli, yeah, maybe it would have been a bit more understandable. But Roma, the team with a lot less Italians than the majority of Serie, I would say all of Serie A teams, really?
Well, I think Berube did that because I think he was doubling down on Ale Moreno's, you know, kind of the attack on Ale Moreno because of it being Roma. And I know everyone looks back the round before where Juve and Real Madrid, you know, everyone looks at that. So I think Burley's looking at it as, oh, you know, the Italian teams are bellyaching. The Italian fans are bellyaching about this. But he brings in the national team and it didn't happen that way. To be factual, it did not happen that way, and
exactly,
and I think that's the biggest issue is that it shows how withdrawn those comments were.
And I understand them, you know, it's hard for them to cover all the five leagues and all the top leagues in the world. It's hard for them. I understand that. But, you know, I think people should have, you know, the basic knowledge to figure out, you know, why this team is good. You know, you can't just say something straightforward and say, oh, this team is bad because, you know, they conceded seven against Liverpool. I mean,
Rob, I'm not going to give them a pass on that. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you and I do this show once a week, right?
Right.
And I would like to think that if we've been able to do this for almost 5 years now, that we're able to talk intelligently on this show,
right,
where our knowledge is at a respectable level.
I would say so.
You and I cover six leagues. We cover Champions League. We cover Europa League. We cover Copa Libertadores. We cover Sudamericana. We cover CONCACAF Champions League. We cover World Cup. We cover Copa America. We cover the Euros. We even do a little bit in Africa with the African Cup of Nations.
Mexico, I mean, MLS, and obviously
Gold
the top five, please.
Please, you can't. And my friend, this is not our job. This is just, we enjoy doing this. Those guys are paid.
Exactly.
They collect a paycheck. So I will not accept that as an excuse that they don't go and look at that. That's shame on them. Shame on you for not knowing what's going on. It's your job, okay? If I was that bad at my job, I'd get fired. Okay, so it's your job to know that stuff. Go do your job,
or at least have some sort of knowledge. Don't be like a full-on expert, but certainly have a knowledge that's definitely respectable within all of the masses, I would say.
Yes, I'm not asking you to tell me what Daniele De Rossi's shoe size is, you know.
Exactly.
But
certainly have talk about, you know, oh, okay, yeah, Dzeko is a great player for Roma, and he's been so influential for them because he scored, he did that kind of thing.
Exactly. So, I mean, you and I can bounce around. We can go talk about Bayern Munich right now, and it's not a problem.
Exactly.
You know, but you don't sit there and go, oh, well the Italian national team complained about the refereeing. No, you're an idiot for even suggesting that. And shame on you, because it just goes to show you that you're really just looking for the listens, you're looking for the clickbait, and you're not paying attention to what really happened. It's, to coin a phrase, Rob, it's fake news. Right? So,
or at least alternative facts.
Alternative facts, that's right. Let me get our guest in here right now, because I want to, I definitely want to get him in here and get his two cents on this particular topic, because I think it's an important topic. And especially, you know, seeing that he works with Breaking the Lines, I think he's a great guy to have on to talk about this. So, joining us on Low Limit Football right now, from Breaking the Lines is Zach Lowy. Zach, how are you tonight?
Hey, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Thanks for coming on. So I want to jump in real quick, because Rob and I were just discussing the comments by Ali Moreno at ESPN FC status post the Liverpool 4-2 loss to Roma on the second leg of the Champions League semifinal, which then obviously put them through. And Moreno, with his player rankings and his commentary, kind of poo-pooed on quite heavily on Roma, you know, by just saying they're not good enough. But really, it wasn't so much that he was saying they weren't good enough, because, like we said, they weren't good enough to beat Liverpool over two legs, and we agree with that. But the way that he just destroyed or dismantled them verbally, and then to have Craig Burley come back, you know, a day later and defend him by saying the Italian national team, the fans of the national team, were complaining about the same things, it shows that his factually was out of touch. So I don't know if you got a chance to see any of that back and forth, especially on Twitter, with Ali Moreno and his comments. And I just wanted your thoughts about the reporting on that.
Yeah, I did get to see it. Look, I have no issues with criticizing Roma. I mean, this Roma team, for all their successes in the Champions League, it's been kind of an up and down season. But if you're going to criticize them, at least make it educated. At least give educated criticism. And I think the problem with Ali Moreno and Craig Burley's comments were, I just don't think they watched much Roma. I don't think they watched more than four games of Roma the entire season. So I think that if they had actually studied them more and provided more deep analysis, then, yeah, I mean, I would have accepted their criticism. But the fact is, you know, I see a lot of them, you know, saying, what was the issue with Barcelona? What was going on with Barcelona? The fact is, I mean, I watched the game, Barcelona, I mean, Roma were much better, obviously, in the second leg, but they're also as good, if not better, than Barcelona in the first leg as well. They completely outplayed Barcelona over both legs. Mm-hmm. They outplayed Chelsea. They outplayed Atletico. They outplayed Shakhtar. And they gave Liverpool a hell of a run, I must say, even though Liverpool certainly were better. So I really don't think, I don't get this criticism of Roma when I can name several other underdog stories in the Champions League that were much, much weaker than that we've seen of Eusebio Di Francesco's Roma side.
Now, let me ask you this. If because I'm along the lines with you where I feel like they watched maybe four or five games tops. Two of them were the two Liverpool legs. But other than that, really didn't watch Roma at all this year. So if they watched more Roma, if they watched more Serie A, if they paid more attention to the league, would the criticism have been different? Would it have been so tainted, or would it have been the exact same criticism we heard on Wednesday?
I think that the criticism of Roma in the ESPN FC show was kind of blunt and one-sided, and it wasn't exactly fine-tuned. Now, if you had told me that, Roma have some spacing issues between defense and midfield, or that their midfield simply isn't constructing enough for their attackers, or that there's not enough chemistry between that Raja Nainggolan is not on a similar level of last season. Yeah, I would have accepted that. But the fact is, I really think that you can't get a fair outlook. I think you've got to properly judge a team. I think you've got to watch, at least like 15, 20 games. And that's really only the tip of the iceberg. I mean, to fully understand and appreciate a team, you should watch pretty much every game. And it sounded like these guys barely watched any. And Roma have been a lot better in the Champions League than Serie A, even though they're still probably going to get third in Serie A, which tells you, it's been a pretty good season. So, yeah, I think that it was kind of, it was sort of like a bludgeoning of Roma in that, oh, man, what did we see here? And the fact is, Liverpool have the best front three in football, okay? They tore apart Manchester City. They tore apart Roma. They might even tear apart Real Madrid. So I think that, you can't just judge a team based on a few games. And I think that was honestly my problem with the criticism, because there's a lot of things to criticize Roma about this season. But I really think that, fact is, Liverpool had a much better team than Roma, and they deserved to be in final, but Roma definitely gave it a Warriors effort.
No doubt.
And it's certainly been an interesting season, I would say, for Roma. I think many people really started to doubt them at the beginning, perhaps them not being up to the standards of, and this is, I would say, early on in the season when they started, when you compare them to Milan or Inter, when they had so much promise because of the players that were coming in, but certainly has surprised a lot of people. And Zach, just going to my first question, I mean, you talk about perhaps the criticism or perhaps just maybe the incoherent thinking of how people view Roma because they aren't, watching them too much in Serie A or maybe just a little bit in the Champions League. But, given the season that they've been having, especially under Di Francesco, I mean, you would have to put them perhaps as one of the top 10 teams at the end of the season, don't you think? I mean, outside of the champions, obviously.
Top 10 teams in football?
Yeah, I would say even including the champions. Yeah, I would. This is just the question I'm asking. Like, would you put them into that top 10, or do you feel that maybe there's still something that is missing for them?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. Let's see. If I had to make my top 10 right now, I'd probably go, okay, got to go with PSG, despite their poor European run. Got to go with Bayern. I think I'm going to put in, so that's two right there. I think I'm going to put in City and Liverpool.
Okay.
Going to go with Real Madrid, Barcelona, no particular order, of course, Atletico. What's that, 7 right now?
7, yeah.
Okay, Juve, and then I would say, I think that two of the four of Lyon, Napoli, Marseille and Roma, I would say. So yeah, I think that Roma probably have a good shout, to be honest with you. And of course, you know, Napoli, for example, for all the pressure that they've had in trying to pressure Juve for the Scudetto, the fact is they crashed out of the group stage to what, like Feyenoord and Shakhtar.
Yeah, that's it.
They should have qualified from that group, so they couldn't get past that group stage. They couldn't get past Leipzig in Europa. So when you look at it, I mean, yeah, Napoli certainly contested Juve for longer, but the fact is Napoli are going to end the season trophyless. Roma are going to finish the season trophyless. So yeah, I think you could definitely argue, you could certainly argue that Roma have been a top 10 team this season. I think that at the end of the day, I think I would probably put Roma and Marseille as my last two. Yeah,
no. I think Marseille perhaps has that advantage, you know, given their campaign in Liga and, of course, being in the Europa League final. So that definitely puts them at a more of an advantage. But certainly, you know, you can't just shy away from the success, or even not, I wouldn't say like total success, but certainly a campaign that they've been doing, especially under a new manager. And, of course, without Francesco Totti being such an emblem to this team, it's certainly been a really good season for them, that's for sure. But, you know, looking into this final real quick, obviously we have our two teams. We have Real Madrid, who, you know, had such a, I guess, comparable to Liverpool, maybe on a more, I don't want to say as a stereotypical point of view, but certainly you would think Real Madrid had perhaps the harder campaign, given that they played PSG, you know, they played Juventus, and they played Bayern Munich, but Liverpool had Roma, Manchester City, and Porto, which is obviously three teams that are completely hard in itself. But do you feel that we have the deserved finalists in this Champions League final, or do you feel that, you know, there's still something that maybe you think to yourself, okay, maybe Barcelona should have been deserved, or Bayern Munich? I mean, do you really think that we have the two right finalists heading into this this final in Kiev in a couple of weeks?
buena pregunta. look, I think that it's a difficult concept to talk about deserving. You know, what does deserve really mean? At the end of the day, you've got to beat the team in front of you. You know, I remember Real Madrid had like the easiest run to the Champions League of all time. They played, if I'm not mistaken, they played in the round of 16. They played Schalke in 2016.
Yeah,
they played Wolfsburg, which this was Wolfsburg without De Bruyne and not a very good Wolfsburg team, in the quarters, and they almost lost them. Then they played a Manchester City team that had practically given up already, with Pellegrini as a walking duck, or as a sitting duck. And then, yeah, they played Atletico, which were like third place that season. Yep. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to – look, I'm going to say this. I think that no matter who wins the Champions League final, no matter who wins in the Europa League final, I still think that Barcelona has been the best team in the world this season. We kind of dropped the ball over those two legs, and to be honest, we were poor throughout the Champions League knockout stage. We were pretty poor against Chelsea, honestly. That scoreline was a bit misleading, and Roma, of course, the first leg was a bit misleading. So, but you know, I don't believe that 90 minutes should define a season. I mean, the fact is Barcelona have been incredible pretty much every single week this season. But no, I think that there are two different, you know, concepts. There are two different ways to define this. I think not only the best team in the world, but also the best player in the world. That's why I think that, you know, even though a lot of journalists will say that this the final in Kiev will be a 90-minute duel between Mohamed Salah and Cristiano Ronaldo to define who is the best in the world, for me, the best in the world is defined not over 90 minutes, but from September to May. That's why Lionel Messi is the best in the world for me. But I think that when you go back to your original question, deserved, go back to deserved. Yeah, I think so. Because I honestly thought that Manchester City would beat Liverpool. And of course, I thought that Barcelona would beat Roma too. But look, Liverpool, they totally annihilated Porto. Mm-hmm. They totally annihilated Manchester City. they pretty much annihilated Roma as well. And I mean, Madrid, on the other hand, while they did have a very tough schedule, they got kind of lucky against Juve in the second leg. They definitely got lucky in the semis when Bayern pretty much dominated both legs in the semis. They still managed to get the final, but at the end of the day, it's all about finding a way to win. That's what the Champions League's all about.
And I think that's the importance and the main importance of the whole competition. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think, and this going back to Barcelona, and I'll ask Joe this as well. I mean, you would have to think that, you know, given the season that they've had, obviously it has been perhaps a bit misleading in the knockout stage for the Champions League. Yeah. But, you know, this is a team that's going to finish with a double, you know, that are probably going to finish unbeaten in such a tough league that is La Liga, and have won the Copa del Rey, and certainly given a sensational, I would say, season, you know, especially for a player like Lionel Messi, who is rightly deserved the best in the world, heading into this World Cup. So yeah, Joe, I mean, do you agree with what Zach has to say? And also, going into Liverpool as well, you know, you talk about perhaps, you know, I even said this to you even before their game against Manchester City, that many people need to start, you know, focusing on them. I even maybe, you know, perhaps to use a cliche, I mean, perhaps they were a bit of a sleeper, I would say, you know, heading into this game to win the Champions League. And now look at them now. So, yeah, I mean, Joe, what do you think of all that?
Yeah, I mean, first off, on the Barca point, I do think that they are, you know, for me, they're roughly the number one team. I know everyone's going to look at the winner of this Champions League final and say that they're the best team in the world, but it is hard to argue with a Barcelona side that has not lost in La Liga all season long. And you talk about, Zach, you talked about teams that find a way, you know, how big that is and how important that is. And you look back on the Clásico on the weekend, they were down 10 men for 60 minutes and found a way, truly found a way. I mean, we're going to talk about El Clásico in a few minutes, but that's a characteristic of a big team. And Rob, to correct you, it's not that they are going to win the double. They have already won the double.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I meant.
They've already wrapped that up. So this is all gravy. And really, for me, like you and I talked about, Rob, you know, at the beginning of the show, before we even came on the air, this was the last hurdle. The Clásico was the last hurdle. And and I think from here, they are probably home free. It's obviously Villarreal is going to be a little bit of a tricky spot. But
Yeah,
but Levante at the end should you know, be a walk for them. And if Barca want to finish this season undefeated, which I think I heard the fact this morning on SiriusXM, it'll be the first time anyone's gone unbeaten in La Liga since something like 1932. Real Madrid did it, but it was over. But Real Madrid did it over 18 games, not 38. So, I mean, you know, think of the accomplishment that Barca will pull off if they win or draw these last two matches. It's incredible. And you look at the record versus, you know, everyone else thinks of the modern day Invincibles at Arsenal. That team tied 12 matches. This Barca team is not going to do that. Or I'd have to look to see where they would finish if they, let's say, they drew the last two. But think about it. It's just an amazing, amazing accomplishment, especially when you've got to face Cristiano Ronaldo twice in one season. Yeah. It is an absolutely amazing achievement.
I'm just going to correct you here real quick and look at the last two games, I would say. For Barcelona, they have 26 wins, 9 draws, no losses. So, yeah, they would draw 11 if they do draw those last two games. So, yeah. Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up a point to the earlier discussion. You know, I remember back in the round of 16, a fascinating tie was Juventus against Tottenham Hotspur. Tottenham pretty much dominated for the entire draw, but it was just these like 20, 30 minutes of those 180 minutes where Juve got just a little bit of domination, a little bit of empty space, and that's what did it for them. That's why they won. So it really just shows you how influential. It's not about how long you dominate. It's what you do with your time when you are dominating.
Definitely. So just switching gears real quick, and obviously we will talk about more of the Champions League and the other league campaigns in a bit, but I want to shift gears to the World Cup. Obviously, we're less than 40 days away from the World Cup. It's going to be entertaining for many teams to see what they can achieve, especially heading into this end of the season to see how, you know, well, I would say, like, informed they are, perhaps not as injured or anything of those sorts. But, you know, looking real quick, Zach, and I'm going to ask you this, you know, looking real quick at the top five favorites for the World Cup, currently Brazil are the odds favorite to win the World Cup at 4-1, followed by Germany 9-2, France 13-2, Spain 6-1, and Argentina 9-1. Obviously, you know, there are many factors that are going into this way for all these teams, you know. But would you say that this is a respectable ranking of favorites to win the World Cup? Or do you feel that maybe there's still a slight advantage that one of these teams has over the other teams?
Sorry, it's Brazil, Germany, Spain, Argentina. Who else?
No, it's Brazil, Germany, France, Spain, Argentina, in that order.
Brazil, Germany, France. Okay. That's fair. I think I've said that for a while. Brazil are my picks to win it. Of course, that means they're going to lose it, but still, I mean, I think France have the best squad on paper, but I just don't see Didier Deschamps leading them to glory. And I think that's what, you know, Tite has done a great job. And that's honestly, I think that Tite's influence on Brazil, his just management. That's the reason why because I think he's a good enough manager to win the World Cup. I think that Sampaoli is good enough. I know Joachim Löw is good enough. I don't think, and Lopetegui has also done good things with Spain. But on the other hand, I just don't see Deschamps doing it. I just don't think he's good enough in the big games. I think that France is easily the best team going into the World Cup, but I just don't see it happening. The best team almost never wins in these scenarios, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is a thought that's always crossed my mind. We've only had, what is it, I believe, 8 champions, right? Italy,
right.
Spain, France, Germany, England, Uruguay, Argentina, Brazil, and
yep.
Seven,
yep.
8 champions. So given those teams, and obviously Italy's not there this time around, do you feel like there's a team, trust me, it breaks my heart, but do you feel there is a team that has not won the World Cup that could very well win it this time around?
Very interesting question. Man, that's tough. It's tough because I just think that, first of all, I like some of the African teams. I like Morocco and Senegal going in. Mm-hmm. I think that Belgium have a loaded squad, but like France, I just don't see a team with Roberto Martinez as manager winning anything. As for the rest, yeah, I think that it'll go between those five. Not sure, really. I mean, possibly Colombia. I like that Colombian team a lot, and Mexico I like as well, but I think it's got to be between those five. They've got so much quality, so much coaching quality, and so much chemistry too. Yeah, I think this is definitely going to be between those five, personally.
What about Portugal?
Now that you mention it, yeah, Portugal actually could do something. I think that Portugal's biggest question mark is their center back crisis, because really they've only got one top level center back. And that's Pepe, and he's like 34, and he's also facing a race to be fit. But still, they've got a great squad, good depth. Santos is a decent manager, and of course they've got Cristiano Ronaldo. And so yeah, I think that they could make noise. Like I said before, I think it'll be between those five. Mm-hmm. But Portugal definitely have the best shout out of anyone outside that five, just out of the talent they have in their squad. Ronaldo, it's probably going to be his last international tournament. You got to think he's going to do his part, especially if they lose the Champions League final. You know, that's kind of the last straw for the Ballon d'Or contest. If you can make some noise in the World Cup, then that's definitely going to help his Ballon d'Or candidacy. So, yeah.
No doubt about it. I do want to close with the Serie A race.
Right.
You know, obviously, and we're going to finally declare it here. You know, this is like CNN on presidential election night, right? We're going to officially declare a winner here right now. Juventus is going to win the Serie A championship. Obviously, right now, the best Napoli can do is tie on points, And they are, I believe, 16 goals behind at this point with two matches to play. Yeah. So it's a ridiculous mountain. And although it's mathematically possible, it is extremely unlikely. So I thought this would actually go one more week. I thought we were going to have to see Juve-Roma before we could say that one team was going to be the official winner. So, but, I mean, even then, it took 36 of 38 matches to finally declare a winner, where all the other races in Europe were done back at the beginning of March, really. And in fact, I think the first race we declared official...
Don't sleep on Portugal's race.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. I mean, and we're talking about in terms of the quote-unquote top five leagues. But even City, we declared City before Christmas. And and people were still like, oh no no, they got to get through Christmas. It's like, come on, seriously, these guys are destroying the EPL. What are you talking about? So, what do you think of the race this year in the Serie A? And do you feel that this is the last season of Juventus's 7-year run?
people have been asking me that question for like 4 years. So. No, I'm sorry. I think that, look, I understand that Napoli, you know, they've held on until pretty much the finish line, but I've had it in my mind since February that, you know, this Napoli team is gonna burn out, and they did. And for a certain number of factors, one, I think Sarri's lack of rotation, I think a failure to change things up. You know, I think that Mertens, Hamsik, a lot of players were getting by just on merit and not by form. I think that he should have made a lot of more changes. But of course, he's not the best rotator. And a lot of other factors come to play. But the fact is, Juve have the best squad in the league, and they have the best coach in the league. They're just so far ahead of any other team in Italy. Mm-hmm. And it's a credit to really everyone at the club, from Marotta to Paratici to Allegri to Dybala, for the increasing gap. And I mean, I do think that Juve need a big summer, personally, because I think that we've just been on the cusp of so many transitional summers for Juventus over the past few years. It looks like Buffon will finally leave. And yeah, I think they just need a big summer. I don't think... Last summer it had some great signings. Douglas Costa has turned out to be probably the key factor in this Serie A title race for my money. Mm-hmm. Bernadeschi also is going to manage, but I feel like they've got to go big this summer. I would go for Milinkovic-Savic if I'm Juve. I think that Allegri, the question of Allegri staying will also be interesting, because I think that if Allegri does go, they're going to go for Ancelotti. And Ancelotti, for all his flaws and perhaps declining coaching methods, I do think there's no coach better at cup competitions than Carlo Ancelotti. So I think that should be fun to see if Allegri does go. But yeah, to answer your question, no. I think Juve will... I can't see any team beating Juve next season. Because they're just such a well-run club. It's hard to give justice to how well-run of a club they are. They never skip a beat. They're always one step ahead of the rest. You know, from their squad quality to the stadium to their scouting to pretty much having every youngster in Italy on a leash. They're just an incredibly run club. And for information, I wanted Napoli to do it. I wanted Napoli to do it the past few years. But the fact is, Juve are just so far ahead. There's such a gap between Juve and everyone else that, no. Maybe 2020, but no, not next year.
Let me ask you this then, because Wesley Davidson from Calcio Mercato asked this question this weekend, right, and I responded on my personal Twitter. His question was, who has the best chance of ending Juve's run in the next 2 to 3 years? Now, I'll repeat my answer after you, but I'd like your answer, you know, first to that question.
I'm going to go with Roma, actually, just because I think that when you look at the key factor behind Juve's success, behind their reinsurgence after the relegation and the Calciopoli scandal. Mm-hmm. I think that the key factor above all was Giuseppe Marotta. I think he's one of, if not the best sporting director in football. But when you look at that, when you're looking at who's coming for the throne of Marotta, Monchi, arguably the best in, definitely one of the best sporting directors in football, now on Roma's son. And I've liked Di Francesco for a while. I liked him at Sassuolo. I think he's got what it takes to take this Roma team to the next level. Monchi, huge fan of his work. So to have Monchi as the, you know, the chief scout, the chief sporting director at Roma. You know, I like what Pelota is doing as president as well. And if they can keep hold of Di Francesco as coach, they can keep hold of the pieces like Alisson, Cengiz Under, and they've certainly got to work on that midfield and that defense and the just depth in general. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Roma has the best case. I think it's going to take a while for the Milan clubs to get back to where they used to be. Lazio are kind of content just being a selling club, which is fine. Napoli, as we've seen from the past 3 years, are just pretenders. They play beautiful football, but they're pretenders. So yeah, I'm going to say that Roma have the Giallorossi have the best shot of breaking the dynasty.
Rob, I want to throw the same question at you because you and I did not talk about this question over the weekend. So I'll repeat it for you quickly. Wesley Davidson from CalcioMercato.com asked, who has the best chance of ending Juve's run in the next 2 to 3 years? So I'd like your 2 cents on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of want to echo what Zach has to say about Roma. I think that they do have like a plan, certainly a well set plan of directors obviously becoming great like Monchi is, and you know, just the type of players that they can be able to access, and you know, they do have to really replace a few of the cracks that they have, you know, as Zach mentioned, like in the midfield and the defense. But you know, I started to think about it, and you know, you kind of want to mention Milan, but certainly they're a team that perhaps is a bit on a roller coaster ride. Inter, you kind of worry about them as well, even though many people thought that they were going to do something this season, especially under Spalletti, but definitely, you know, didn't do as much, and especially depending on what's going to happen with a player like Mauro Icardi. But yeah, I mean, you know, if there's one team, and obviously Napoli, you know, they're a team that perhaps isn't up to the standard of what they should be. But yeah, I mean, the only team I can think of, and I think Zach has made a great point what he has to mention, is Roma. I think that, you know, given what they were able to do in the Champions League this year, you know, Eusebio Di Francesco is a great manager, and I think that what he was able to do at Sassuolo, he was able to perhaps replicate or even do better at Roma. Yeah, I mean, I personally would pick Roma. I think they do have a chance because I feel that they are perhaps the team with a good ambition and really a well set plan for them to really fight against Juventus and really break that strong force that they've been having for many years.
My answer to Wesley from my Twitter page, and I'll quote it: I still think it's Roma, but if Milan ever get their act together, .. for all the good Sadi offers Napoli, it's his lack of trusting his depth that is the team's undoing. And I think this stretch run and these last 4 or 5 games in the Serie A have been a testament to that statement, where they're just, you know, even I think, Rob, I mentioned to you, I want to say it was the week after the Juve game, and I don't remember who Napoli was playing, but I said they looked tired. It was Fiorentina.
Where Simeone scored the hat-trick.
Yes, and I said they looked tired, especially as the game dragged on, you know, even after coming out of the locker room at the half. They just looked tired, and I think it's, you know, they got so high up for that Juve match that it took all the energy they had, and they're just kind of done. And at this point, it's more going through the motions. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So Zach, I do want to thank you for joining us on the show tonight. We had a great time, especially with all your insight on the different questions. And I for one am definitely looking forward to having you back on the show very, very soon.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I'm looking forward to coming back on. Thank you for doing what ESPN FC cannot do and show that Americans know a lot about Calcio.
Sounds good, man. Have a good night.
Good night. Okay. Peace out.
Yeah.
Zach Lowy from Breaking the Lines. Fantastic to catch up with him. That was a lot of fun. And again, Rob, you and I have talked about how, you know, we've been blessed with many, many guests, but to have a guest that can bounce all over the world like that is just is loads of fun. So,
and we'll just continue to echo those statements for every type of guest that we get that is able to do that.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. So, Rob, you know, I know we went kind of long with Zach. We had him for quite a while, and I do want to cut it a little short. A couple things I want to mention. I don't think we're going to hit every topic tonight. Nice. I think maybe we'll talk about the Copa America next week.
Sure.
I do want to mention right off the bat for Sir Alex Ferguson, if you hadn't heard, Sir Alex Ferguson was hospitalized over the weekend in intensive care with a brain hemorrhage, otherwise a stroke, which he had immediate surgery on. There was a report out of the Daily Mail saying that he was showing signs of early recovery from his brain hemorrhage. But either way, no matter how you slice it, it doesn't matter. You know, this is one of the greats of football, one of the greats of ours or any generation, and we certainly hope the best for him, and our thoughts and prayers being used appropriately for Sir Alex as he recovers and him and his family battle through this the situation.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, a legend in our game, and perhaps one of the greatest of all time, maybe the greatest of all time. But you know, he's won multiple titles for Manchester United and really has been an influential force on English football and world football in general. So yeah, our thoughts and prayers go to him for hopefully a safe recovery, and that we hope we get the best Sir Alex Ferguson in the foreseen future, I would say.
Definitely. I do want to, you know, while we're on the topic of coaches, obviously Arsene Wenger had himself a wonderful send-off and a 5-0 victory over the weekend for Arsenal. They did a whole guard of honor for him. They gave him the trophy from the Invincibles season, which I thought was a fantastic gesture as well. But obviously the talk now turns itself to who is going to be next. And there's reports coming out, which if you've been watching Twitter over the past even hour, you would have seen that there's reports of Allegri's people actually being in contact with the folks at Arsenal. Whether that comes to fruition or not, we'll have to see. I know that Thomas Tuchel will probably be confirmed at PSG as early as Wednesday. I think what they're just waiting on is the Coupe de France, which is coming up on the weekend, which we'll talk about with our matches coming up. But Rob, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people, I'm not necessarily one of them, but I know a lot of people would be happy to see Allegri leave Juventus and have Juve go in a different direction. But, I mean, your thoughts, I mean, is this Arsenal job the right job?
I mean, it's certainly, maybe, you know, this is without any criticism to Arsenal in general, but I think it's a step behind, don't you think? Because, you know, you're looking at an Arsenal that is going to probably play Europa next season. You know, it's big shoes to fill given the time that Arsene Wenger has been able to be there for many, many years. You know, and you know, obviously we'll compare Sir Alex in this one with him and David Moyes, but I feel that maybe Allegri is better suited at the job. And you know, obviously, I guess, accepting the criticism and obviously the stress and definitely everything that comes into that heading into this, you know, big job of replacing such a legend in the game, that I think Moyes wasn't able to do it because he didn't have that type of experience. Whereas Allegri, you know, he managed Milan, he managed Juventus. I feel that, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he's able to perhaps manage this all. Obviously, you would think that he would be able to get the players that he wants. But that's just how I feel. It's definitely now going to be interesting to see what happens to Juventus more than anything, because, you know, Allegri was in charge for, what, 3 years now, 4 years now, I would say, yeah. And certainly was able to maintain that consistency that Antonio Conte was able to get. But, you know, let me ask you this. I mean, where do Juventus stand after this if he does leave for Arsenal?
That's the question. You know, I know Zach brought up, because Zach kind of touched on this a little bit, and he touched on Ancelotti possibly being the next guy at Juventus if Allegri does leave and go to Arsenal. I don't think it's going to be Ancelotti, though, because Ancelotti was pretty keen about tweeting this week that he's going to be watching the Coppa Italia with a friend in Canada, and they're both going to put their Milan jerseys on. So he does not want Juve to win the Coppa Italia. To me, it doesn't sound like it's a job that he wants.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's obviously an influential part in Milan. You know, he won Champions League both as a player and as a coach, so it would make more sense. But yeah, I don't feel that that's the job that perhaps is well suited for him, and maybe he doesn't want it. So then you're back to the drawing board. And to be fair, I mean, you know, no disrespect to any other clubs, but you know, Juventus is a club that maybe, you know, 90-95% of all the managers in the world would love to manage, except the ones that perhaps have much more an identity to a specific club.
Yeah, the question is right now, as a Juventus fan, it's not so much who we should get, who's good enough to coach Juve, but you know what I mean, who is going to be that guy that is the best possible choice given the pieces that we have. That's going to be the issue, and that's going to be the stuff that that folks like Agnelli and Marotta and even guys like Nedved and all those guys,
yep,
they need to sit down and say, okay, if Max leaves, who is the best coach, the coach that's best equipped to run this team from here? I mean, for me, I almost think it's Eusebio Di Francisco, but I don't think he's leaving anytime soon.
Maybe if he was still at Sassuolo, perhaps, but given what he's done at Roma, yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I agree.
There's so many out there. I mean, you talk about Conte as well. Maybe he wants a return back.
Yeah, I don't know that Juve would take him back though because of the way he left. I don't know if that's going to be the case. So we'll.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a lot, honestly, because, you know, managers aren't like players. You know, they aren't in market. There are only a certain few that have that world-class capability, and it's hard to find. And those that are free, you know, maybe just don't want to do it or want to go for a higher challenge. I mean,
yeah
it's tough. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in their shoes, that's for sure.
No doubt. Let's switch topics here. Let's switch gears. Let's come over to the United States real quick and the Hudson River Derby, where, you know, Rob, this has been a somewhat of a one-sided quote-unquote rivalry. I know it's not an incredibly old rivalry, but NYCFC has only managed to win this tie 3 times overall, and that certainly was not the case this weekend. Kaku putting a goal in within the first 20 minutes on the way to a 4-0 victory at Red Bull Arena for New York Red Bull. You know, NYCFC has slipped a little bit here, and David Villa was not much, didn't have much of an effect on this match. I mean, this NYCFC team got out to such a hot start that I'm having trouble seeing them catch back up here now that they've kind of stumbled here a little bit.
Right. No, of course. I think it's going to be I think it's going to be a tough race for this Eastern Conference title. Or at least, like, you know, to be in the top positions, yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, you're looking at, and obviously it's still early on, but, you know, you have Atlanta, you know, being completely wonderful across all barriers. NYCFC is on a great start, even though they didn't do it so well on the weekend, but even the Red Bulls and Orlando City, yeah, it's certainly going to be a tough, tough race for these teams that I mentioned, for them to be able to contend for the top positions in the Eastern Conference and certainly, you know, contend for a knockout round position or a conference semifinal position.
Yeah, and you know, just looking at NYCFC, they've lost 2 of their last 3 matches, both by shutout. 4-0 to the Red Bull on the weekend, 3-0 to the Timbers, that was a couple weeks ago over in Portland. They've really got to get this screwed back on straight, because Atlanta United, who has moved into first place on the record of 7 wins, 1 draw, and 1 loss, are really starting to take a stranglehold of that top spot in the Eastern Conference and actually overall. The other thing I want to bring up with MLS, Rob, before we jump off of this topic, Toronto FC off the basement with a win this weekend, beating Philadelphia Union 3-0, which is something that was, you know, expected. But it also goes back to a point that I've made a few times here on the show. As they were going through CONCACAF Champions League and fielding a B squad, there was always going to be time to jump back in this race, and I think you're going to start to see that with Toronto FC as the season moves on.
Definitely.
Yeah, so let's you know, while I've got them up real quick, I'm just going to give you the top scorers real quick in MLS, because obviously it's a young season. Joseph Martinez is currently leading the way on 7 goals. Miguel Almiron, 6 goals. Dom Dwyer on 6. Bradley Wright Phillips on 6. And then there's a slew of players at 5, but that's your top 5. Obviously, we're about 10 matches in so far in the MLS season, and we'll see that carry through the summer. We'll do each league recap as we lead up to the World Cup once the leagues start closing up. Let's do El Clasico, Rob. Yep. I'm going to give you the keys to the car in this one because I know we both watched it very closely, but I want your thoughts on it first and foremost.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. I mean, certainly perhaps not one, maybe one of the best. I mean, I'm sorry, probably one of the, you know, least high-fell Clásicos in such a long time, don't you think, Joe?
Yeah.
I mean, given the circumstances, obviously Barcelona are the champions of La Liga, Real Madrid are in a Champions League final, you know, there aren't too much to really talk about. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's been certainly a tale of everything. I mean, you know, you had Barcelona playing with 10 men for a half. You know, you had the great performances of a player like Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. But it's certainly been one of those. It was an interesting game, to say that perhaps it could have been better in one sense, but you feel kind of, I don't know, apathetic towards it or indifferent, because it has such a different vibe that it didn't have in the last few El Clásicos. Of course, many people didn't expect Barcelona to be in this position heading into May 6th game. So I don't know. I feel indifferent about this El Clásico, but it certainly was a great game. 2-2 draw. It ended. Goals from Messi, Suarez, Bale, and Ronaldo. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. But I am a bit perhaps indifferent to it.
Yeah, you know, for a match that had absolutely nothing on the line, there was a lot of venom in this match for me. It's eight yellow cards. The Sergio Roberto red card for basically punching, I want to say it was Rafa Varane. You know, correct me if I'm wrong on that, in the 45th minute, actually 45th plus three, it was stoppage time. And then obviously with the Messi goal coming
Marcelo.
Oh, he punched Marcelo. That's right. Coming out of the locker room with a Messi goal, which was spectacular. You know, and then obviously Bale, you know, ties it back up in the 72nd minute on this one. But it for a match that had nothing on the line, I mean, this is a done deal. You know, Real Madrid is pretty much qualified for the Champions League. I think they've already qualified for Champions League next year. They have also, you know, obviously they've got the Champions League final on their plate. Barca's already won their two trophies. There was nothing to play for. And for a match for me that had nothing to play for, there was a lot. You would have expected teams to just go through the process. But like I said, there was a lot of venom in this match, which made it somewhat entertaining. Again, La Liga officiating was a little questionable in this one. I think anyone will admit to that. I believe on the Messi goal, and I didn't see it, but Luis Suarez, I believe, took a swipe that one might have been Varane, where he took a kick at him, but nobody saw it. And the goal was scored by Messi. So, for me, I thought it was a pretty good game. I think it slowed down in the second half, but I think a lot of that rough and tumble was really in the first half. I mean, five of the eight yellow cards and the red card were all in the first half, along with the two goals by Ronaldo and Suarez. So, I thought it was good overall, and it was good overall for a match that didn't really have anything on the line for me. That's what I thought about it. So let's close it out, Rob, with our topics of the week there. Let's give you the matches of the week coming up, and we're going to start off tomorrow with the Coupe de France final between Les Herbiers and PSG. That's a kickoff at 3:05. On Wednesday, we've got midweek action with the MLS and with the EPL. I'm sorry, but I lost my train of thought there. But first and foremost, the Juve Coppa Italia battle against AC Milan is going to be Wednesday at 3 p.m. Chelsea Huddersfield, which is going to be a race for the Champions League. Chelsea on the 1-0 victory on the weekend over Liverpool, Rob, really stuck their nose back in that Champions League spot. And with Tottenham slipping up a little bit, we've got ourselves a little bit of a race. Even Liverpool, to an extent, is in this battle. So we've got Chelsea Huddersfield on 2:45 p.m., Spurs Newcastle at 3 p.m. on Wednesday, and with MLS action midweek, we've got the top two teams in the league, Atlanta United and Sporting KC, playing at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday. On Saturday, the season will end in Germany, and the big one there, since many of the spots have been decided, is the relegation zone battle. And so we're going to highlight Wolfsburg-Cologne, which is going to be Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Wolfsburg currently sit 3 points behind Freiburg. Freiburg is, I believe, going on to play Augsburg, who currently sit 11th in the league. And that's really where your battle is. I think Hamburg at this point might have an outside shot to sneak in, but they're going to have Mönchengladbach Really playing for nothing at this point. Leipzig, they might have a slight outside chance to catch Leipzig for a Europa League spot, but really got nothing on the line here. So this Wolfsburg matchup against against a team they should beat in Cologne, who's already been relegated, is going to go a long ways. We have a fantastic matchup to feature in La Liga this weekend as well. On Saturday, we have Real Betis playing Sevilla. This is for Champions League positions. That's going to be at 12:30 p.m. And in the Europa races, Rennes, who's currently sitting outside the Europa League spots, I'm sorry, holding onto the Europa League spot from Nice, battles PSG in Ligue 1 at 3 p.m. on Saturday. On Sunday is the final day of the season for the Premier League. So obviously, as we sit in that league with Spurs on 71 points, Liverpool on 72, Chelsea on 69. We've got three teams battling for two Champions League spots. We have Spurs Leicester City that's going to play at 10 a.m. and Newcastle Newcastle at home to Chelsea at 10 a.m. as well. And the technically potentially championship clinching match for Juventus will be at 2:45 p.m. against Roma. Would be a big match whether the championship was on the line or not. But that's going to be your round of matches. For this week, Rob, anything in particular that tickles your fancy?
No, I mean, I think basically the games you mentioned are the ones to look out for. It's going to be interesting that David and Goliath matchup between in the Coupe de la France. So, I mean, nothing stands out too much. I mean, you know, we kind of decided already our champions. We kind of already decided European spots for most of the leagues, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing more. I mean, I guess we're just waiting for the Europa League final, Champions League final, and then the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, just going back to the German Bundesliga, there's still a big chase for positions there, because Hoffenheim, currently in fourth on 52 points. They hold the final Champions League spot. Leverkusen on 52 points as well, so they're just outside by goal differential. Leipzig on 50, Eintracht on 49, Stuttgart on 48. And then, like we had said, Mönchengladbach on 47 with a very, very remote chance of getting in. So there's still a lot to be had in Germany, but it would be too many games to mention. But they play them all Saturday at 9:30 in the morning, so you'll definitely want to keep your eye out for the Bundesliga matches on Saturday. Rob, let me give you the trivia question again.
Sounds good.
All right, man. So, again, in the Champions League era, so since 1990, I believe we said 93, Real Madrid has made seven finals, breaking a three-way tie amongst two other teams for six appearances in the final, the most in the modern era. Can you name the other two teams?
Okay, so the one that really stands out more than anything, and obviously this is a team that we talked about during our interview with Zach, is Milan.
Yes, AC Milan was there six times. And again, I don't have the dates as to their appearances. I guess I could have done more homework, but and the source is ESPN. But can you name the other team?
Juventus?
That's correct. It is Juventus. So there was a three-way tie for most appearances in the Champions League final between Real Madrid, Juve, and AC Milan. And Real Madrid, going to their seventh final coming up at the end of the month, will break that three-way tie. So... Rob, I don't think I have anything else on the docket. Again, I want to mention that you can catch this show and many other great shows on the All In Sports Talk Network. You can also catch many of our World Cup previews that are running up there, and I'm sure we'll have some type of special series running before we lead up to the World Cup. But with all that done, what do you think, the closing music time?
Sounds good.
All right, let's hear it. Let's hit it. And let's get that turned down again. So... for episode 202 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Zach Lowy from Breaking the Lines for joining us tonight. Next week, we're gonna preview the Europa League final, as those two teams will face off. It'll be Atleti and Marseille. And we will start to, the countries will start to reveal their teams, their 23-man rosters for the World Cup. We'll start discussing those. And Rob, we're going to have to start talking about the transfer window, both managerial and player-wise, as the summer fast approaches. So, for episode 202 of Low Limit Football, I'm your host, Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.